Isaiah 58, 6 through 12 says this, "Is this not the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out? When you see the naked, that you cover him and not hide yourself from your own flesh? Then your light shall break forth like the morning. Your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, 'Here I am.' If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and speaking wickedness, if you extend your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then your light shall dawn in the darkness, and your darkness shall be as the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and strengthen your bones, and you shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. Those from among you shall build the old waste places. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations, and you shall be called the repairers of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in." This is how Eugene Peterson says it in the Message Bible. Shout a full-throated shout. Hold nothing back, a trumpet blast shout. Tell my people what's wrong with their lives. Face my family Jacob with their sins. They're busy, busy, busy at worship and love studying all about me. To all appearances, they are a nation of right-living people, law-abiding, God-honoring. They ask me what's the right thing to do and love having me on their side. But they also complain. Why do we fast and you don't look our way? Why do we humble ourselves and you don't even notice? Well, here's why. The bottom line is your fast days is profit. You drive your employees much too hard. You fast, but at the same time you bicker and you fight. You fast, but you swing a mean fist. The kind of fasting you do won't get your prayers off the ground. Do you think this is the kind of fast I'm after? A day to show off humility? To put on a pious long face and parade around solemnly in black? Do you call that fasting? A fast day that I, God, would like? This is the kind of fast I'm after, to break the chains of injustice, to get rid of exploitation in the workplace, free the oppressed, cancel debt. What I'm interested in seeing you do is share your food with the hungry, inviting the homeless poor into your homes, putting clothes on the shivering ill-clad, being available to your own families. Do this, and the lights will turn on, and your lives will turn around at once. Your righteousness will pave your way. The glory of God will secure your passage. Then when you pray, God will answer. You'll call out for help, and I'll say, "Here I am." If you get rid of unfair practices, quit blaming victims, quit gossiping about others' sin, if you're generous with the hungry and start giving yourselves to the down and out, your lives will begin to glow in the darkness. Your shadowed lives will be bathed in sunlight. I will always show you where to go. I'll give you a full life in the emptiest of places, firm muscles, strong bones. You'll be like a well-watered garden, a gurgling spring that never runs dry. You'll use the old rubble of past lives to build anew. rebuild the foundations from out of your past, you'll be known as those who can fix anything. Restore old ruins, rebuild and renovate, make the communities livable again. This is the word of God. I want to speak with you just a few moments from the subject, My Worship is for Real. My worship is for real. In life, there are no superheroes, just ordinary people committed to doing extraordinary things by the work of our hands, the movement of our feet, and the power of the Spirit. It will serve us well to remember this as we continue to discern our work and our witness in a world that so often seems in need of superheroes. A world not unlike the world of ancient times that the prophet Isaiah faces in this text. A world enhanced by technology that makes it difficult to not see the heartache and the trauma and the deprivation, the injustice that surrounds us and infuses us. And much like kryptonite with Superman seeks to drain our strength. As I stand before you this morning, I am conscious that I am standing in a time when we are a divided people in this nation. I am standing in a time when just a little while ago, we decided that the Sioux tribes' plea for clean water and no pipelines through their sacred land is going to go once again unheard. I'm aware that I'm standing even as we argue about a pipeline through Sioux territory, that we still have not found a way to have clean water in Flint. I am reminded that I'm standing at a time where even though our attention through media has shifted to something else, the reality is black bodies are still dying. I am standing at a time that the state where we are living in a place where the state has people occupying the highest offices of government who are choosing to play political games with people's safety and their security. I am standing in a nation where politicians have lost their minds, choosing as their highest priority defending whatever they have said is true over serving the needs of the people. We have a political cabinet that debates personalities instead of critical issues. And I confess to you, my friends, that sometimes it's just a little too much for me. Sometimes we need to be reminded that ultimately evil will not overtake good. Love will conquer hate. And we have been given both the authority and the power to make this world a better place. In this text, the prophet Isaiah is talking to people returning from exile in Babylon and to some people who had stayed behind in Jerusalem. He is speaking to people whose institutional memories still hold images of blood-filled streets and burning buildings and dead bodies. He is speaking to people who have grown accustomed to division and infighting and finger-pointing and hateful speech and the hoarding of resources under the false pretense of right religion. The prophet Isaiah speaks to these people about their extraordinary power to change things. He reminds them in this text that there is a better way. He reminds them that they can choose to remove the yoke from among them. They can choose to stop blaming others and speaking evil. They can choose to rid themselves of empty religious rituals and be about the holy work of feeding the hungry and tending to the needy and healing the wounded. And in the midst of this holy work, God's self will guide them, the prophet says. and refresh them and renew them and strengthen them for the work. God's self will empower them to do the extraordinary work of healing, and the people will identify them as the repairers of the breach, restorers of streets to live in. This passage of scripture resonates with me right now because we, my friends, are living in a breach. We are living in streets that are no longer safe, streets where human life and human dignity are often discarded by many, streets where children are no longer safe to play, and many are without shelter and are denied places to lay their heads. Streets that devour over 300,000 children nationally and 2 million children globally in sex trafficking to satiate our perverted cravings to exert dominion and power over bodies that are the most vulnerable among us. Streets where 41% of those killed by police are still black lives, in spite of black bodies only comprising 20% of the population. Streets where 49 million Americans struggle to eat in a country where food is not scarce. Streets where 3 to 4 million people will experience homelessness just this year. Like those returning from exile in Babylon and those who stayed behind, we are a people who have been divided. We are divided by race, divided by class, divided by religion, divided by political affiliation. We live differently. We are educated differently. Our cultural and social contexts are not the same. We experience America differently. We listen to different news sources, follow different Twitter feeds, read different books, and we blame one another for the condition of things and use hateful rhetoric against those who do not feel like we do. Some of us love our country for what it used to be. Some of us are satisfied with what it is right now. And others of us are in love with what it can become. Like the people in Jerusalem, we also face a huge and increasingly widening gap between the haves and the have-nots, between the hungry and the well-fed, between those who are privileged and those who are targeted. Many of our breaches are now systemic in nature, and the chasm seems too wide to close. But then there are other breaches that we have caused ourselves. Breaches caused by our refusal to discover the image of God in those who are different than ourselves. Breaches formed by our limited and limiting understanding of God and creation. And often it is difficult to tell, my friends, that we profess to be followers of an Afro-Semitic Palestinian who was born on the wrong side of the tracks. Yet, like our kinship of long ago, we too long for the breaches in our lives to be repaired, for the wounds to be healed, for the streets we live in to be made safe. And beginning in verse 2 in this chapter, God notes that this word the prophet Isaiah speaks is not to those who don't want better. This word is to those who are the religious people. They are quite happy with the externals of religion, with prayers and temple sacrifices and worship services. They are proud to be God's own chosen people. But God is not experientially real to them. Their lives are boring and dull. Their carefully crafted and often repeated prayers go unanswered. Their fasting brings no results, and yet they are waiting on God to show up. These people are full of piety, but they are void of power. Why won't God answer us? It's tempting, as people of faith, to wait around for God to work, to wait for God to repair the breaches of our world, to rebuild the ruins of our lives. Yet in this text, when the people cry out to God to fix it, I hear God saying through the prophet Isaiah, you fix it yourself. You've been given the ability to repair the breach. You can make a decision to stop oppressing others. You can stop blaming others. You can decide to stop using hateful rhetoric. You can feed the hungry. You can meet the needs of the neediest. And when you do this, I will show up and guide you. I will make you strong, and you will have everything you need. And then you will be called the repairers of the breach, the restorers of the streets to live in. What is Isaiah talking about? What is Tracy talking about? I am talking about the need for a theology of resistance. A theology of resistance is a spiritual and moral understanding of justice that is rooted in the belief that the structure of the universe is on the side of justice, that there is a higher law than human law, that there are moral laws in the universe that we cannot violate with impunity any more than we can violate the physical laws of the universe, and that to violate moral law places one's relationship with God in jeopardy. This is a theology that demands deconstruction of an idea of chosenness. It is outlined by Walter Brueggemann in his latest book. It is a concept I'm deeply wed to, as it means a restoration of places that have been severely broken in this world because we have embraced and embodied a theology that imagines a God of favoritism instead of a God of favor. We have created a God who would choose my well-being and my comfort and my security and my liberation over and against those same principles of living for other people. It is a theology that allows room for complacency because we interpret conditions of our current society as consequences of evil rather than as consequences of apathy and inaction. Isaiah is saying to the hearers of his day and to those of us listening today through the text that it is not faithful to hide our self-interest and inaction underneath cloaks of feigned righteousness. It is not faithful to simply say a prayer for those who are hurting and not live a prayer in their view. It is not faithful to only provide charity and resist changing systems. It is not faithful to take cover within our fortresses of secured neighborhoods and manicured lawns and then blame those who are born and kept outside for their own demise. It is not faithful to languish in the breaches of our own making. It's not faithful to refuse to engage in the holy acts that are necessary to heal both our personal and our communal areas of brokenness. It is not faithful to avoid speaking truth to power. It is not faithful to not act on behalf of justice. We are not a people of no hope. We are not called to adapt to brokenness. We are not called to rest in the breach, content to wait on God. We are called to repair using what God has already done. And yet, as we continue in this crazy political world we're in right now, we are reminded just how much our culture appears to reward breach makers. As violence in our streets is escalating, we're reminded how easy it is to become residents of a breach instead of repairers of a breach. And yet, as more and more walls are built and borders are fortified and families are disrupted with deportation and more of our resources are siphoned away from those in need and hoarded by those with plenty, We are reminded of just how disconnected we have become from our shared humanity and our shared divinity. And it is easy, like the Israelites, to lose hope. So we must keep a vigilant lookout for the repairers so that we don't lose hope. A few months ago, I spoke in Chicago at, of all places, an evangelical conference. God has jokes. And I followed a man named Tony Campello. Do any of you know who that is? I think I'm the only person in America who didn't know who that was. And he had followed many preachers, including Father Flager, from Chicago, who painted on this particular day a very grim picture of what was happening in Chicago. That's where we were, in the city of all the violence. And Tony Campello, who is now in his 80s, stood up. My grandmother always said, when you go past 70, you can say whatever you want to say. And so he stood up and he did just that. And he began his talk with us saying, people have been studying for a long time trying to figure out why people are leaving the church. I think I just figured it out. If I came to church and heard a message that gloomy, I'd leave too. And we began to talk about the fact that it is easy to lose oneself in messages that seem to have no hope when everything around you is going so crazy. But the challenge is, even in the midst of this, to look for the repairers, to look for signs of streets that are being restored, to look for glimpses of hope. When I arrived here yesterday, I saw those glimpses. I saw those signs in the new building that's next door that houses homeless men and a clinic. I saw glimpses of that when I noticed that your welcome signs were translated into multiple languages. I saw glimpses of that to know that you have created this beautiful space and made space in this space for those who speak different languages and those who have difficulty communicating with the majority of people who live here. I saw that as I saw an art room with the most massive kiln that I've ever seen in my life in the church, representing the fact that we all don't communicate through the same mediums. I saw that when I looked at the pool table in the youth room, acknowledging the fact that they get tired of listening to our hot air. I see that in the way you're going about your search process with great care and great diligence to preserve and make room for change. Look for the signs of hope. They are there. So as we enter this Lenten season, a time when many would fast, I offer you the words of Pope Francis. I consider him to be my Pope as well. Do you want to fast this Lent? Then fast from hurting words and say kind words. Fast from sadness and be filled with gratitude. Fast from anger and be filled with patience. Fast from pessimism and be filled with hope. Fast from worries and trust God. Fast from complaints and contemplate simplicity. Fast from pressure and be prayerful. Fast from bitterness and fill your heart with joy. Fast from selfishness and be compassionate to one another. Fast from grudges and be reconciled. Fast from words and be silent, so you can listen. Sometimes we repair breaches with words. Sometimes silence. Sometimes laughter. sometimes a well-placed question or gesture, a part of my commitment to repair is I decided to stop berating people on social media. It's much too easy. I decided to speak up when others are being attacked. I decided to assume the best about everyone I encounter until they prove me wrong. I decided to stop making excuses for when I mess up and simply ask for forgiveness. And I, my friends, have begun to see God's healing work happen just through these simple gestures. God's grace at work through repairers of the breaches in our lives look like people standing up to bullies and people turning from blame to praise. They look like a caution to be kind, a gesture made, a gift given. Little things add up over time. This is the superpower of ordinary people to change the world. People like you and like me, individually and collectively working together with God to restore the streets and repair the breaches that people live in. Isaiah says, if we remove the yoke from among us and we stop the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, and offer food to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted, if we do these things, Isaiah proclaims, then the Lord will guide us continually and satisfy our desires with good things and make our bones strong. And we shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters fail not. Thanks be to God.